that Jarlaxle was somehow using it to disrupt the castle's possession of the woman. A moment later, Arrayan opened her eyes. She seemed more embarrassed than hurt, and she accepted Ulgercon and Entreri's help in getting back to her feet. "We are running out of time," Jarlaxle stated, the obvious for the others, but his tone explaining clearly to Entreri that he could not long delay the inevitable life-stealing process. "Quickly, then," the drow added, and Entreri gave a nod to Arrayan, then left her with Ulgercon and sprinted back to the front of the line. He had to hope that there would be no more traps, for he did not slow every few feet to inspect the ground ahead. The corridor continued to bend and spiral, but began to narrow again, soon becoming a mere dozen feet across, and with a jagged ceiling often so low that Ulgercon had to crouch. Entreri felt the hairs on the back of his neck tingling. Something was ahead, he sensed, whether from some smell or perhaps a sound barely audible. He motioned for the dwarf behind him to halt, then crept ahead on all fours and peered around a sharper bend. The corridor continued for another dozen feet, then the stone floor fell away as it opened into a great chamber. He remembered Jarlaxle's words about the king of the castle, and he had to take a deep, steadying breath before going forward. He crept ahead, belly crawling, as he exited the corridor into a vast cavern, on a ledge high up from the uneven floor. To his right, the ledge continued for just a short distance, but to his left it continued on, sloping down toward the unseen cavern floor. It was not pitch black in there, as some strange glowing lichen scattered about the floor and walls bathed the stone as if in starlight. Entreri crawled to the edge and peered over, and he knew they were doomed. Far below him, perhaps 50 feet, loomed the king of the castle, a great dragon. But not a living dragon of leathery skin and thick scales, but one made mostly of bones, with only patches of skin hanging between its wings and in patches across its back and head. The gigantic dragon carcass, mostly skeleton, crouched on the floor with its bony wings tucked in tight atop its back. If Entreri had any doubts that the creature was alive, they were quickly dispelled when, with a rattle of bones, the great wings unfolded. Swords, armor, and whitened bones littered the chamber all around the undead beast, and it took Entreri a few moments to sort out that that had been the spot of a desperate battle, that those weapons and bones belonged to warriors, likely of King Gareth's army, he realized when he gave it some thought, who had done battle with the worm in the time of Zhenyi. Entreri started to back up, then nearly jumped out of his boots when he felt a hand on his shoulder. Jarlaxle moved up beside him. "He is fabulous, is he not?" the drow whispered. Entreri shot him a hateful look. "I know," the drow said for him. "Always dragons with me." Down below, the dragon of bones and torn skin swung its head to look up at them, and though it had no physical eyes, just points of reddish light, its intimidating gaze rattled the companions. "Dragon cadaver," Entreri said with obvious disgust. "A dracolich," Jarlaxle corrected. "That is supposed to sound better." The drow just shrugged. And the dragon roared, its throaty blast reverberating off the stone walls with such power that the assassin feared the ledge he lay upon would collapse.
"That ain't right,"
Athrogate said when the echoing blast at last relented. The dwarf had come up as well, but unlike Entreri and Jarlaxle, he wasn't lying on the stone. He stood at the lip of the ledge, staring down, hands on his hips. He looked at Jarlaxle and asked,
"That the king?"
"One would hope."
"And what are we supposed to do with that thing?"
"Kill it." The dwarf looked back down at the dracolich, which hunched upon its hind legs, sitting upright, head swaying, 2-foot-long teeth all too clear with little skin covering its mouth.
"You're joking with an old dwarf," said Athrogate.
He didn't rhyme his words, and Entreri knew that no bwahahas would be forthcoming. Jarlaxle pulled himself up. "I am not," he proclaimed. "Come now. Our time of trial is upon us. Run along, mighty Ulger Khan, for the sake of your lady Arrayan, and you, good Athrogate, fearless and powerful. Those brittle bones will turn to dust before your mighty swings. Ulger Khan roared and came out onto the ledge. Then with strength and power they had not seen from him before, he took up his heavy club and charged down along the ledge.
"You're really not joking with an old dwarf?"
Athrogate asked.
"Shatter its skull," Jarlaxle cheered.
Athrogate looked at the drow, looked down at the Dracolich, looked back at the drow and shrugged. He pulled his morning stars over his shoulders and whispered to his weapons alternately as he ran off after Ulger Khan, bidding their enchantments forth.
"Fill your teeth with half-orc bread,"
the dwarf yelled to the waiting beast,
"while Athrogate leaps atop your head! Bwahaha!"
"And now we leave," Entreri remarked, coming up beside Jarlaxle and making no move to follow his two warrior companions. But then it was dark, pitch black, so that Entreri couldn't see his hand before his face if he'd waggled his fingers an inch in front of his eyes. "This way," Jarlaxle bade him, and he felt the drow's arm around his waist. He started to protest and pull away, sheathing his dagger to free up one hand, though he dared not move too quickly on the ledge. But the assassin was caught by surprise when Jarlaxle pushed against him hard, wrapping him in a tight hug. The drow then fell the other way, off the ledge. The dragon roared, and Treri screamed. But then they were floating, as the drow enacted the power of his levitation, and as they sat down on the cavern floor, Jarlaxle threw aside the stone he had enchanted with radiating darkness and let go of Entreri. Entreri rolled to the side, putting some distance between himself and the dark elf. He got his bearings enough to realize that the Dracolich wasn't looking at him and Jarlaxle, but was focusing on the half-orc and the dwarf as they continued their raucous charge down the sloping stone ledge. Entreri had his chance to strike with the element of surprise. With the beast distracted, he could get past its formidable defenses and score a mighty blow. But he didn't move, other than to look down at his weapons. How could he even begin to hurt something like that? He glanced to the side and considered leaping over and stabbing Jarlaxle instead, but he found the drow with his eyes closed, deep in concentration. Jarlaxle had some hidden trick to play, it seemed, or at least, that's what Entreri hoped. But Entreri still did not charge in against the beast, as it was no fight that he wanted. He rushed away from the wall, weaving toward the far side of the cavern, putting as much distance between himself and the half-orc and dwarf as possible. He glanced back as Ulger Khan cried out, and he nearly swooned to see a line of black spittle spraying from the Dracolich's skeletal mouth. Though he was still fully 20 feet from the floor, the half-orc desperately leaped from the ledge ahead of that spit, which engulfed the stone and immediately began to melt it away. "Once a black dragon," Entreri heard Jarlaxle explain in reference to the acidic breath weapon, trademark of that particular beast.
"It can breathe?" Entreri gasped. "It's a skeleton, and it can breathe?"
But Jarlaxle had closed his eyes again and was paying him no heed. Entreri ran along faster, heedless of Ulger Khan's groans. He did glance back once to take note of the poor half-orc, crumpled on the floor, one leg bent out at a disturbing angle, obviously shattered. How ridiculous, he thought. For the first time, the half-orc had seemed as if he might be ready for battle, and there he was, out of the fight yet again before it had even begun. And he was Arrayan's hero and true love? The momentary distraction cost the assassin dearly, for when he looked back, he saw the great bony tail swiping his way. Arrayan, too, fought a great battle, but hers was internal and not carried out with sword or wand. Hers was a test of will, a battle as one might wage with a disease, for like a cancer did the darkness of the Zhengian construct assail her. It clawed at her life energy with demonic hands. For days it had pulled at her, thinned her, sapped her, and now, so close to the king of the castle, the monstrous beast she had inadvertently awakened, Arrayan had come to the final battlefield. But she had no way to fight back, had no strength to go on the offensive against the Dracolich and the continuing intrusions of the book. That was a physical battle for her companions to wage. She had to just hold on to the last flickers of her life, had to cling to consciousness and identity. She had to resist the temptation to succumb to the cool and inviting darkness, the promise of rest. One image, that of Olger Khan, carried her in her battle, though she knew it to be a losing cause. For all those years he had been her dearest of friends. He had tolerated her pouting when she couldn't unravel the mysteries of a certain spell. He had accepted her selfishness when all of her thoughts and all of her talk had been about her own future and dreams. He had stayed beside her, his arm offered in support through every setback, and he cheered her on from afar through every victory. And she had accepted him as a friend, but just as a friend. She had not understood the depth of his devotion and love for her. He had worn that ring, and though Arrayan had not been in on the placement and explanation, she understood the properties of physical arbitration the matched set had created. He had suffered terribly so that she could get where she was, so that she would have her one chance, feeble as it seemed. She could not let him down. She could not betray the trust and the sacrifice of a half-orc she loved. Yes, loved, Arrayan knew beyond all doubt. Far beyond her friend, Olger Khan was her partner, her support, her warmth, and her joy. Only when she had seen him near death had Arrayan come to fully appreciate that. And she had to fight on. But the darkness beckoned. She heard the ruckus in the far room and managed to open her eyes. She heard the approach of someone from the other direction, but she hadn't the strength to turn her head. They passed her by, and Arrayan thought she was dreaming, then feared that she might have gone over to the netherworld. For those three, Ellery, Mariabrone, and Canthan had certainly died, yet they walked past her, ran by her, the warrior woman hefting her mighty axe, the ranger holding his legendary sword, the wizard preparing a spell. How was it possible? Was this the reality of death?
"Wahaha! Ye got to be quicker than that, ye bony worm!"
Athrogate bellowed as he dodged past a slashing claw, dived under the biting fangs, and came up with a smashing swing that cracked hard against the Draco Lich's foreleg. Bone dust flew, but the leg didn't give out or crack apart. Athrogate had put all of his weight behind that strike, had let fly with all of his magically enhanced might, and had used the enchantment of the Morning Star, the oil of impact coating it for maximum effect. He hadn't done much damage. He hit the leg again, and a third time, before the other foreleg crashed against his shoulder and launched him into a flying roll. He bounced through the heap of bones, weapons, and armor, finally coming back to his feet, just in time to leap aside to avoid the snap of the Draco Lich's powerful and toothy jaws.
"A bit of help, if ye might!"
the dwarf yelled, and that was as close to a call of panic as had ever been uttered by the confident Athrogate. The Draco Lich bit at him again, and he dodged aside and even managed to snap off a 1-2 routine with his Morning Stars, their glass steel heads bouncing alternately off the thick dragon bone. The creature showed no sign of pain or fear, and the head pressed on, snapping at him over and over. He retreated and dodged, jumped back, and when the Draco Lich finally caught up to him, the dwarf leaped up high, just high enough to get above the thing's snapping maw. He was spared a deadly bite, but was thrown back into the floor. When he landed and slid down onto his back, he noted Olger Khan still squirming and grabbing at his shattered leg.
"By the gods, ye dolt, get up!"
Athrogate pleaded. And Treri wasn't quick enough. He jumped and turned sidelong, but got clipped by the swinging tail and spun halfway over. He kept the presence of mind to tuck his head and shoulders and turn all the way as he landed among the bones, but when he came back to his feet, he found that one ankle would hardly support his weight. He gave it a cursory glance to see blood staining the side of his boot. He hopped and limped along, though, and still his thoughts were to simply find a way out of there. All along, Entreri had expected that Jarlaxle's thirst for adventure would eventually put them in a position where they could not win. That time had come. He stumbled on a tangle of bones, then threw himself flat as the Draco Lich's tail swung back his way but higher off the ground. He glanced back across the length of the undead beast to see Jarlaxle standing quietly off to the side, to see Athrogate's desperate struggle against the more dangerous weapons of the dragon, to see Olger Khan squirming in agony, and to see... The assassin blinked repeatedly, unable to comprehend the scene before him. Running down the slope to join in the fray was Ellery. Ellery, supposedly dead at his hand. And behind her came Mariabrone, also dead. Entreri snapped his glare back at Jarlaxle, thinking that his friend had deceived him. He hadn't seen Ellery's corpse, after all. Was it all just a lie? Even as he contemplated abandoning his flight and rushing back to slaughter Jarlaxle, however, he realized that he had indeed seen Mariabrone lying in the utter stillness of death. Entreri's gaze was drawn up to the small landing at the top of the ramp. There stood Canthan, waving his arms. Now that man was dead, Entreri knew. More than dead, his soul had been destroyed by the jeweled dagger. Yet here he was, casting a spell. Farther down, still 40 feet from the ground, Ellery took up her axe in both hands and leaped out into the air. Suicidal, Entreri thought. But could it be suicide if she was already dead? She soared from on high, her body snapping forward as she crashed down beside the Dracolich, her axe slamming into a rib with tremendous force, taking a chunk of bone and tearing a long line of tough skin all the way down to the ground. She landed hard, but came right back to her feet, swinging with abandon, without concern for any semblance of defense. Behind her came Mariabrone, leaping far and wide. He slammed down on the Dracolich's back, face first, and somehow held on, eventually bringing himself to a sitting position, straddling the beast's huge spine. He locked his legs around a vertebra, took up his sword in both hands, and began slamming away. The Dracolich reared, and from above came a sudden and blinding stroke of lightning that crackled around the creature's head. But if the lightning hurt the Dracolich at all, the beast didn't show it. It all made no sense to Entreri, so of course he glanced back at Jarlaxle. The drow just stood there, serene it seemed, with his eyes closed in concentration. Entreri shook his head. That one always had a trick to play. His sigh was one of disgust, his shrug one of helplessness, but Entreri changed direction and lifted Karin's claw above his shoulder. Perhaps it wasn't the end after all. The Dracolich was focused on Canthan, and Athrogate charged back in from the front as Entreri limped in at the back. Ellery and Mariabrone pounded away with abandon. The assassin still shook his head, though, doubting that it would be enough. He watched the serpentine neck lift the head fast toward the wizard. Canthan let loose a second spell, and the Dracolich's skull momentarily disappeared within the flames of a fireball. It came through smoking and blackened in spots. With his free hand, Entreri pulled out the side of his cloak and whispered, "Red," into a pocket, then grabbed Karin's claw with both hands, determined to make his first strike count. Up above, the Dracolich's head snapped Canthan from the ledge, its powerful jaws taking in the wizard to the waist and clamping hard. The beast swung its neck side to side, and Canthan's lower torso fell free from on high as his upper body was ground into pulp. Entreri wanted to scream, but he growled instead and came up on the Dracolich's rear leg, throwing all of his weight behind his strike. He did some damage, but hardly enough, and it occurred to him that he would have to hit the creature 1,000 times to kill it. Canthan was already gone. The Dracolich fell to all fours and swiveled its head around to spit forth another stream of acid, one that engulfed Mariabrone and melted him in place. Entreri reconsidered his course. Beside him, a skeleton rose, lifting a rusting broadsword. The assassin slashed at it, felling it with a single stroke. But all around him more bones rattled, collected themselves, and rose. Entreri looked everywhere for some way out. He moved to strike at the next nearest skeleton, but he stopped short when he realized that he was not their enemy. The skeleton warriors, formerly men of the army of Bloodstone, attacked the Dracolich. Stunned, Entreri looked again to Jarlaxle, and his mind whirled with the possibilities, the insanity, as he noted that Jarlaxle stood with one hand extended, a purple-glowing, skull-shaped gemstone presented before him.
"By the gods!" Athrogate yelled from in front, and for the first time Entreri was in full agreement with the wretched little creature. All around the great chamber, the army of Bloodstone rose and renewed the battle they had waged decades before. 100 warriors stood tall on skeletal legs, lifted sword, axe, and warhammer. They had no fear and only a singular purpose, and as one they rushed in at the beast.
Metal rang against bone. Leathery skin tore apart beneath the barrage. Athrogate had no idea what was happening around him or why. He didn't stop to question his good fortune, though, for had the dead not risen, he undoubtedly would have met a sudden and brutal end. The Dracolich's roar thundered through the room and nearly felled the dwarf with its sheer power. A line of acidic spittle melted one group of skeleton warriors, but as the beast lowered its head to breathe its devastation, another group of warriors charged in. Athrogate saw his opening. He called forth more oil of impact on his right-hand morning star and charged in behind the group of skeletons, pushing through them and letting fly a titanic swing. The explosion shattered dragon teeth and took off a large chunk of the Dracolich's jawbone, but before the dwarf could swing again, the great skull lifted up beyond his reach. Then it came down, and hard, and Athrogate cried out and dived away. Skeletons all around him got crushed and shattered, and the dropping skull smacked him hard and sent him sprawling, his weapons flying from his grasp. He tried to rise but could not. He sensed the Dracolich coming in at his back and knew he was doomed. But first he was grabbed by the front by a stumbling half-orc, who yanked him aside and drove him to the ground, then fell atop him defensively.
"Ye still smell bad," the dwarf muttered, his voice weak and shaky.
Ulgercon would have taken that as a thank you, except that the half-orc was barely conscious by that point, overwhelmed by the lines of agony rolling up from his broken leg. Entreri slashed and bashed with all his strength, his mighty sword having some effect. The cumulative efforts of all the fighters was their only chance, he knew, and he played his part. But not too well, for in Entreri's thoughts, first and foremost, he did not want to draw the Dracolich's attention. Wherever that attention went, the beast's enemies crumbled to dust. And the great creature was in a frenzy by that point, its wings beating and battering, its tail whipping wildly and launching warriors through the air to smash against the chamber's distant walls. But metal rang out on and on, snapping against bones, tearing rotting dragon skin. One wing came down to buffet Ellery, but when it reached its low point, a dozen undead warriors leaped upon it and hacked away, and bit and clawed and tugged on bones with skeletal arms. The Dracolich roared, and there seemed to be some pain in that cry, and thrashed wildly. The skeletons hung on. The Dracolich rolled, and bones splintered and shattered. When it came around, the skeleton warriors were dislodged, but so was its wing, snapped right off at the shoulder. The creature roared again. Then it bit Ellery in half and launched her torn corpse across the room. Stubbornly, relentlessly, the skeletons were upon it again, bashing away. But Entreri recognized that the ring of metal on bone had lessened. A line of spittle melted another group of charging skeletons. Forelegs tore another undead soldier in half and threw its bones at yet another. The Dracolich flattened another pair with a downward smash from its great skull. All hope faded from Entreri. Despite the unexpected allies, they could not win out against that mighty beast. He looked over to Jarlaxle then, and for the first time in a while the drow looked back. Jarlaxle offered an apologetic shrug, then tugged on the side of his hat's wide brim. His body darkened, his physical form wavered. The dark elf seemed two-dimensional more than three, more of a shadow than a living, breathing creature. He slipped back to the wall, thinned to a black line, and slid into a crack in the stone. Entreri cursed under his breath. He had to get away, but how? The ramp was no good to him with a large section burned out of it. So he just ran, as fast as his wounded ankle could carry him. He stumbled across the room, away from the Dracolich as it continued its slaughter of the skeleton army. He looked back over his shoulder to see the creature's massive tail sweep aside the last of the resistance, and his heart sank as those terrible red points of light that served as the beast's eyes focused in on him. The monster took up the chase. Entreri scanned the far wall. There were some openings, but they were wide, too wide. He had no choice, though, and he went for the narrowest of the group, a circular tunnel about 8 feet high. As he reached its entry, he leaped to a stone on the side, grimacing against the stinging pain in his ankle, then sprang higher off of it, catching the archway with both hands. He worked his hands fast, hooking a small cord, then let go and ran on into the tunnel. but it wasn't a tunnel, only a small, narrow room. He had nowhere to run, and the Dracolich's head could easily snake in behind him. He turned and flattened himself as much as possible against the short tunnel's back wall. He drew his weapons, though he knew he could not win, as the creature closed. "Come on, then," he snarled, and all fear was gone. If he was to die then and there, so be it. The beast charged forward and lowered its head in line. Its serpentine neck snapped with a rattle of bones, sending those terrible, torn jaws forward into the tunnel, straight for the helpless Entreri. The assassin didn't strike out, but rather dived down, curled up, and screamed with all his strength. For as the Dracolich's skull came through the archway, came under the red-eyed silver dragon statuette that Entreri had just placed there, the devilish trap fired, loosing a blast of fire that would have given the greatest of red dragon kind pause. Flames roared down from the archway with tremendous force, charring bone, bubbling the very bedrock. The Dracolich's head did not continue through to bite at Entreri, but the assassin knew nothing but the sting of heat. He kept curled, his eyes closed, screaming against the terror and the pain, denying the roar of the flames and the Dracolich. He felt his cloak ignite, his hair singe. The defenders of Palaszczuk fought bravely, for they had little choice. More and more gargoyles came in at them from out of the darkness in the latest wave of a battle that seemed without end. After the initial assault, the townsfolk had organized into small defensible groups, tight circles surrounding those who could not fight. To their credit, they had lost only a few townspeople to the gargoyles, though a host of the creatures lay dead in the streets. In one small room, a lone warrior found less luck and no options. For like some of the other townsfolk who had fallen that night, Callahay had been cut off from the defensive formations. She battled alone, with Davis Aang helplessly crying out behind her. Three gargoyles were dead in the room, with two killed in the early moments of the long, long battle. After an extended lull, the third had come in against her, and it had only just gone down. Its cries had been answered, though, with the next two crashing in, and Callahay knew that others were out there ready to join the fray. She dodged and stabbed ahead, and she thought she might win out against the pair, but she knew she couldn't keep it up much longer. She glanced over at Davis Aang, who lay there with the starkest look of terror on his face. Callahay growled as she turned her attention back to the fight. She couldn't leave him, not like that, not when he was so utterly helpless. So she fought on, and a gargoyle went spinning down to the floor. Another came in, then another, and Callahay spun and slashed wildly, hoping and praying that she could just keep them at bay. All thoughts of winning flew away, but she continued her desperate swinging and turning, clinging to the last moments of her life. The gargoyle screeched so loudly, so desperately, that it stung Callahay's ears, and behind her, Davis Aang cried out. But then the gargoyles were gone. Just gone. They hadn't flown out of the room. They hadn't done anything but disappear. The gargoyle corpses were gone, too, Callahay realized. She blinked and looked at Davis Aang. "Have I lost my mind, then?" she asked. The man, looking as confused as she, had no answers. Out on the street, cheering began. Callahay made her way to the broken window and looked down. Abruptly, without explanation, the fight for Palaszczuk had ended. From a crack in the wall across the chamber, Jarlaxle had seen the conflagration. A pillar of fire had rained down from above, obscuring the Dracolich's upper neck and head. The great body, one wing torn away, shuddered and trembled. What trick had Entreri played? Then it hit the drow. The statuette he had placed over their apartment door in Heliogabalus, the gift from the Dragon Sisters. My clever friend, Jarlaxle thought, and he thought, too, that his clever friend was surely dead. The flames relented, and the Dracolich came back out of the hole. Lines of smoke rose from its swaying head and neck, and when it turned unsteadily, Jarlaxle could see that half of its head had been melted away. The creature roared again, or tried to. It took a step back across the room. It swayed and fell, and it lay very, very still. Jarlaxle slid out of the crack and rematerialized in the chamber, a room that had grown eerily quiet.
"Get off me, ye fat dolt!"
came Athrogate's cry, breaking the silence. The drow turned to see the dwarf roll Olgercon over onto the floor. Up hopped Athrogate, spitting and cursing. He looked around, trying to take it all in, and stood there for a long while, hands on his hips, staring at the dragon cadaver.
"Damned if we didn't win,"
he said to Jarlaxle. The drow hardly heard him. Jarlaxle moved across the room quickly, fearing what he would find. He breathed a lot easier when Artemis and Treri walked out from under the archway, wisps of smoke rising from his head and torso. In one hand, he held the crumpled, smoldering rag that had been his cloak, and with a disgusted look at the drow, he tossed it aside.
"Always dragons with you," he muttered.
"They do hold the greatest of treasures for the taking." And Treri looked around the bone-filled but otherwise empty room, then back at Jarlaxle. The drow laughed. Chapter 22 To the Victor. Olgercon grunted and groaned and held his breath as Athrogate tied a heavy leather strap around his broken leg. The dwarf looped the belt and held one end up near the half-orc's face.
"Best be biting hard," he said.
Olgercon looked at him for a moment, then took the end of the strap in his mouth and clamped down on it. Athrogate nodded and gave a great tug on the strap, yanking it tight and forcing the half-orc's leg in line. The strap somewhat muffled Olgercon's scream, but it still echoed through the chamber. The half-orc's hands clenched, and he pounded them on the stone floor.
"Yeah, bet that hurt,"
Athrogate offered. The half-orc lay back, near to collapse. He flitted in and out of consciousness for a few moments, black spots dancing before his eyes. But then, through the haze and pain, he saw something that commanded his attention. Arrayan appeared on the ledge. She stood straight, for the first time in so long, leaning on nothing. Olgercon came up to his elbows as she met his gaze. "And so it ends," Jarlaxle remarked, he and Entreri moving to the dwarf and half-orc. "Help him up, then. I will levitate you up to join Arrayan on the ledge one at a time." Athrogate moved to help Olgercon stand, but Entreri just moved away to the wall, where he quickly picked a route and began climbing. By the time Jarlaxle made his first trip up, easing Olgercon down beside Arrayan, Entreri was nearly there, moving steadily. When he finally pulled his head above the ledge, he found Arrayan fallen over Olgercon, hugging him tightly and professing her love to him. Entreri hopped up beside them, offered a weak smile that neither of them even registered, and moved off to check the ascending hallway. He sprinted up some distance but found no enemies and heard no sounds at all. When he came back, he found the other four waiting for him, Olgercon leaning on the dwarf with Arrayan supporting him under his other arm. "The corridor is clear," he reported.
"The castle is dead,"
Arrayan replied, and her voice rang out more strongly than Entreri had previously heard.
"Ye can't be sure,"
Athrogate replied. But Arrayan nodded, her confidence working against the doubts of the others.
"I don't know how I know," she explained. "I just know. The castle is dead. No gargoyles or mummies will rise against us. No daemons or other monsters. Even the traps, I believe, are now inert."
"I will ensure that every step," Entreri assured her.
"Bah! But she can't be sure,"
Athrogate reiterated. "I do believe she is," said Jarlaxle. "Sure and correct. The Dracolich was the source of the castle's continuing life, was giving power to the book, and the book power to the gargoyles and other monsters. Without the dragon, they are dead stone and empty corpses, nothing more. And the dragon was giving the book the power to steal from me my life," Arrayan added. "The moment it fell, my burden was lifted. I do not understand it all, good dwarf, but I am certain that I am correct."
"Bah! And I was just starting to have some fun!"
That brought a laugh, even from Olger Khan, though he grimaced with the effort. Jarlaxle moved out before the trio to join Entreri. "We will move up ahead and ensure that the way is clear," the Dark Elf said, and he and Entreri started off. They trotted along swiftly, putting a lot of distance between themselves and the others. "The castle is truly dead," Entreri asked when they were well alone. "Arrayan is a perceptive one, and since she was inextricably tied to the castle, I would trust her judgment in this."
"You seem to know more than she," Jarlaxle shrugged. "No gargoyles and no mummies," Entreri went on. "Their source of power is gone. But what of the undead? Will we find skeletons waiting for us when we get back to the keep?"
"What do you mean?" "Their master, it would seem, walks beside me." Jarlaxle gave a little laugh.
"When did you become a necromancer?" Entreri asked.
Jarlaxle took out the skull gem.
"It was you back there, of course," the assassin said. "All of it."
"Not completely true," Jarlaxle replied. "I brought in our three lost companions, true. You did indeed hear them following us down."
"And left the fourth hanging on a spike?"
Another laugh. "He is a dwarf. The gem grants me no power over dead dwarves, just humans, so if you fall in battle..." Entreri was not amused.
"You have the power to raise an army of skeletons?"
he asked. "I did not," the drow explained. "Not all of them. The Dracolich animated them, or the castle did. But I heard them, every one, and they heard me and heeded my commands. Perhaps they harbored old grievances against the dragon that had long ago slaughtered them." They crossed the room where Entreri had battled Canthan and moved steadily along. No eggs fell from the ceiling carvings, releasing guardian daemons to terrorize them, and no sarcophagi creaked open. When they at last reached the main chamber of the keep, they found that the monsters had broken through the floors. But none remained to stand against them. Bones littered the floor, and a pair of gnome mummies lay still on the stairs, but not a gargoyle was to be seen. Outside it was dark, for it was well into the night by then. Jarlaxle paid it all little heed. His prize was in sight, and he was fast to the book, which still stood on its tendril platform. No mystical runes spun in the air above it, and the drow felt no tingles of magical power as he moved to stand before it. He looked over at Entreri, then tore out a page. He paused and looked around, as if listening for the rumble of a wall crumbling.
"What?" Entreri asked.
"The castle will not crumble as did Herminical's tower."
"Why?"
"Because unlike that structure, this one is complete," Jarlaxle explained.
"And because the life force that completed this castle is still alive."
"Arrayan, but you said..."
Jarlaxle shook his head. "She was nothing more than the one who began the process, and the castle leached her for convenience, not for survival. Her death would have meant nothing to the integrity of the structure, beyond perhaps slowing the growth of the gargoyles or some other minor thing."
"Well, if not Arrayan, then who?" Entreri asked. "The Dracolich."
Jarlaxle tore out another page, then another.
"Dracoliches are interesting creatures," he explained. "They do not die as we know it. Their spirits run and hide, awaiting another suitable body to animate and inhabit."
Entreri's eyes went wide, and despite himself he glanced around, as if expecting the beast to drop upon him. He started to ask Jarlaxle what he meant by that, but paused when he heard the others shuffling into the chamber behind him.
"Well met," Jarlaxle said to them, "and just in time to witness the end of the threat."
He stepped back from the book as he finished and tapped the tips of his thumbs together. Fingers splayed before him. He called upon the power of one of his magic rings. Flames fanned out from his spread hands, washing over the magical book and igniting it. Laughing, Jarlaxle brought a dagger into his hand and began tearing at the tome, sending blackened, burning parchment flying. In that show, the drow found his treasure, and he slipped it into his sleeve under the cover of his slashing movements. He was not surprised by the sight of the prize, a purple glowing gem shaped like a skull. Not a human skull like the one Jarlaxle already possessed, but the skull of a dragon. Immediately upon closing his fingers on the gem, the drow felt the life force of the great black dragon contained within. He felt the hate, the outrage, but most of all, he felt the dragon's fear. He enjoyed that. The five remaining party members did not have to go far to find more allies. With the defeat of the dragon, the defeat of the Zhengian artifact, had come the defeat of the gargoyles. Guessing that something positive and important must have happened out there, Wingham had quickly led a contingent of half-orc soldiers out of Palaszczuk's northern gate. How pleased they were to see the five exiting through the hole in the portcullis Athrogate had earlier made. Pleased and concerned all at once, for four were missing, including a man who had been a friend to Palaszczuk for decades. Arrayan ran to Wingham and wrapped him in a great hug. Cheers went up all around the pair, for Arrayan and for Olgercon, with the occasional reminder thrown in to salute the other three. Those cheers were fast tempered, however, when Olgercon confirmed the deaths of Canthan and Ellery, of Good Pratkis, and of Mariabrone the Rover. So it was a muted celebration, but a celebration nonetheless, for the threat had passed and Palaszczuk had survived. After a short while of cheering and many prayers offered for the dead, Wingham demanded a complete recounting. "There will be time for that when we return to Palaszczuk," Jarlaxle responded, and the others, even ever-curious Wingham, quickly agreed. The castle might have been dead, but they were still deep in the Vossen wilderness, after all. "We almost lost her," Jarlaxle later said to Wingham, for he had made it a point to walk beside the old half-orc on their journey back. Olgercon threw off his ring, and the sudden shock of bearing all the burden nearly overwhelmed the poor girl. Wingham cast him a curious glance and nearly blurted out, "How do you know about that?" Jarlaxle figured, for he read it clearly on the old weapon dealer's face. "When we could not find Olgercon's ring, we knew we had to move quickly. Fortunately, by that time, we were ready to do battle with a true king of the castle, a black Dracolich of enormous size and power." That widened Wingham's eyes.
"You have a few stories to tell," he said.
"It has been a long day," Jarlaxle replied. All of the city turned out that night. The old, the very young, and everyone in between, to hear the tales of the fall of the Dracolich. Jarlaxle served as storyteller for the five, of course, for few in all the world could weave a tale better than the strange old dark elf. Athrogate got in a few rhymes and seemed to take particular delight in the groans of the onlookers. Through it all, Entreri moved to the far side of the common room, trying to remain inconspicuous. He didn't really want to talk to anyone, didn't want any pats on the back, and had little desire to answer questions about the deaths of Ellery and Canthan in particular. But he did see one face among the crowd, in the back and over by the door, which he could not ignore.
"Davisang?"
he asked when he arrived by Callahay's side.
"Resting well," she curtly replied. "He nearly died when the gargoyles attacked the town, but I was there."
"Ever the hero."
Callahay turned a glare over him.
"That would be your title, would it not?"
"We asked you to come along."
"To lie dead beside Ellery, no doubt."
And Entreri merely smiled, bowed, and took his leave. The cheering faded behind him as he walked out into the Palaszczuk night. He was alone with his feelings, including a few that he hadn't even known he possessed. He pictured Arrayan's face, then thought of Dwavel Tiggerwillie's. He considered his anger, his hurt, when Arrayan had professed her love to Olgercon. Why had he felt that? Why so keenly? He admitted to himself that he was indeed attracted to Arrayan. but he had been to Ellery and Callahay as well on that level. He didn't love the half-orc. How could he, when he didn't truly know her? It all had him shaking his head, and as he considered it, with time to think and reflect, with no danger pressing and no distractions, he found his answer. He drew out Idalia's flute and stared at it, then gave a helpless little laugh. So, the Dragon Sisters, and his drow friend, no doubt, had conspired to manipulate him. Strangely, at that moment of reflection, Artemis and Treri was not angry with them. A wagon rolled out of Palaszczuk 3 days later, carrying Entreri and Jarlaxle, Callahay, Avrogate, and Davisang. A handful of Palaszczuk soldiers had agreed to serve as guards and drivers. Behind it came a second wagon, bearing the bodies of Pratkis and Commander Ellery. Of Mariabrunn they hadn't found enough to bury, and Campin's lower torso, though supposedly retrieved by the Palaszczuk guards who had returned to the castle, had not been placed in the cart. Whispered rumors said that it had been claimed and removed in quiet the day before, but even the ever-suspicious Jarlaxle and Entreri had put little credence in the confused reports. "You would be wise to keep all curiosity-seekers out of the castle," Jarlaxle told Wingham, who stood with Arrayan and Olgercon and a much older half-orc, who had been introduced as an old and renowned bard. "The book is destroyed, so the place should be dead by all reasoning. But it was a Zhengian artifact, after all, and we do not know what other surprises the Witch King left in place." "The soldiers who went in have told everyone of the fate of Pratkis," Wingham replied, "and that there was apparently no treasure to be found. The castle will remain as it is until King Gareth can send an appropriate force to investigate." "Farewell, then," the drow said, with a low bow and a sweep of his great hat. "Expect my return here at Palaszczuk, at a time when I might more fully peruse and enjoy the town."
"And you will be welcomed, Jarlaxle," Arrayan put in, "though we'll not likely see you until the spring melt."
Jarlaxle smiled at her, and held up the magical ring she had given him, on his request that he might study it further and perhaps replace its lost companion. Arrayan had no problem in handing it over after Wingham had agreed, for neither knew that Jarlaxle already had the sister ring in his possession. As soon as the others had left that room of battle, a quick spell had shown Jarlaxle its location, and the drow was never one to let such items go to waste.
"Winter is fast approaching," Wingham said. "But then, up here, winter is always fast approaching, if it is not already here." "And you will be welcomed as well, Artemis and Treri," Olgercon added.
And Treri locked stares with the half-orc, then turned his gaze over Arrayan. Her smile was warm and friendly, and full of thanks. And Treri reached into his cloak and pulled forth the flute of Idalia, then looked back to the pair. Feeling Jarlaxle's curious gaze upon him, he turned to the drow. There was apprehension there, and Entreri got the sense that his friend was about to be quite disappointed. He held up the flute, but didn't toss it to Olgercon, as he had intended.
"Perhaps I will learn to play it well enough to entertain you upon my return," he said. And he saw the smile widen on Jarlaxle's dark face.
And Treri wasn't sure how he felt about that.
"I would like that," said Arrayan.
The wagons rolled away. Artemis and Treri spent a long time staring back at the half-orcs, and a long time letting his hands feel the craftsmanship of Idalia's work. The rest of the day proved uneventful. Even Jarlaxle was quiet and left Entreri pretty much alone. They set their camp for the night, and Entreri chose one of the wagon benches as his bed, mostly because then no one was likely to sleep too close to him. He wanted very much to be alone again, and only wished that he had been far enough away from all the others that he might take up the flute and try to learn more of its magic, He found himself wishing he could be even farther away when, a short while into the quiet night, Callahay climbed up to stand beside him. At first, he feared she might make a move against him. His dagger in hand, he knew he could easily defeat and kill her, but he did not wish to do that.
"The road will not be clear tomorrow,"
the half-elf said to him. And Treri put on a puzzled look and swung around to sit up.
"Before midday, perhaps sooner, we will find pursuit. A band of riders coming with questions and accusations," he explained.
"What do you know?"
"The Citadel of Assassins wishes to know about Canthan,"
Callahay explained.
"He was no minor player in that dark association, and now he is dead. Rumors say by your hands."
"Rumors say many things."
"Ultracon told of his near-death experience in the castle. He told of a dagger and of the fall of Canthan. Many years beyond, the small group of friends sitting beside the half-orc heard that tale."
And Treri stared at her hard.
"Archmage Nelict is not Canthan,"
Callahay went on.
"Whatever success you found against that wretch will not easily be replicated where Nelict is concerned. Nor will he come alone, and the men beside him will not be novices to the art of murder."
"Why are you telling me this?"
The woman stared at him for a long while.
"I will not live indebted to Artemis and Treri," she said,
and turned away. Not for the first time, and Treri was glad that he had not killed her. Dawn was still long away when Entreri and Jarlaxle moved out from the wagons. "The word is Blackfire," Jarlaxle explained, as he handed the obsidian figurine over to his companion.
"Black," Entreri started to ask,
but the drow interrupted him with an upraised hand and a word of warning. "Do not speak the summons until you are ready to ride," Jarlaxle explained. "And place the figurine on the ground before you do, for it will summon an equine beast from the lower plains to serve you. I found it on the body of Mariabrone. A curious item for a goodly ranger of the army of Bloodstone to carry." And Treri stared at him, then at the figurine.
"So, if you are ready, we should go," Jarlaxle said.
"You will ride behind me?"
"Beside you," said the drow.
And from yet another of his many pouches, he produced an identical item. And Treri couldn't find the heart to even shake his head. The cries of the nightmares split the night, awakened the others at the wagons, and reminded those who were supposed to be guarding the troop that they were supposed to be guarding the troop. By the time any of them got to the south side of the encampment, though, Entreri and Jarlaxle were long gone. The wind whipped Entreri's hair and buffeted his cloak as the nightmare charged on, fiery hooves tearing at the soft tundra. When dawn broke, the companions were still running, their steeds showing no sign of tiring, though they had put many, many miles between themselves and the wagons. Even with that, however, they found that they were not alone.
"The woman spoke truthfully," Jarlaxle remarked, when a line of horsemen appeared behind them and to the side, riding hard and with purpose. "Let us hope that the Bloodstone lands are filled with places to hide."
The horses would not catch them, however hard their riders drove them. The hellish steeds were too powerful and did not tire. Soon the pair were running free again, and they knew they were much closer to the Vossen Gate.
"We could seek the protection of King Gareth," Jarlaxle remarked,
"until he learns that we killed his niece."
"We?"
Entreri turned his head, and if Jarlaxle hadn't been grinning at that moment, Entreri would have leaped across and throttled him. "If the Citadel of Assassins hunts us, then King Gareth will likely embrace us even more," said the drow. "I am not fond of relying on such things. But until we can sort out the potential of our new power, it will have to do. Well, that and the Dragon Sisters, who I'm sure will look upon us with new respect." respect or hatred. They are not as different as you seem to believe. And Treri moved to reply, but before he could get a word out, the air around the riding pair shimmered weirdly, like a wave of soft blue cloth. Their summoned horses disappeared out from under them, and Treri hit the ground hard, bouncing and rolling, scraping his face and nearly shattering his jaw. As he at last came around, finally controlling the roll, he saw Jarlaxle drift by, the drow still upright and levitating through the momentum of the fall. That was no accident, nor did the duration of the magic of the mounts run out simultaneously, the drow called back from far ahead. And Treri looked around, his hands going to his weapons. To the foothills and quickly, Jarlaxle insisted. The citadel mustn't catch us out in the open. They rushed back to retrieve their mounts, merely obsidian figurines once more. Then they scrambled to the west, where the ground began to slope up, and great tumbled boulders from the Galenas offered them some cover. They were still climbing when far in the distance to the north, they spotted the unmistakable dust and movement of many galloping horses. How did they do that? And Treri asked, when they pulled up with their backs against a huge stone for a much-needed break. Was it an ambush? Is there a wizard about? Was it even them? Jarlaxle asked. If not, then this troop should ride right past us, and Treri reasoned. Both he and Jarlaxle took that cue to peer around the boulder down to the flat plain, where the truth of it all became quite evident, for the pursuers had slowed, with some already turning to the west and filtering into the foothills north of their current position. We should find a defensible spot, Jarlaxle suggested. And Treri didn't blink. When they close on us, you will just turn to shadow stuff and melt into a crack in the stones, no doubt, he said. Jarlaxle considered the words for a moment, but given the incident in the Dracolich's cave, he really wasn't in any position to promise differently. Come, the drow offered. All hope is not lost. There are caves, perhaps.
None that will suit your needs,
came a voice, and the two turned their heads very slowly to see an older man, well-groomed and dressed in splendid robes of purple and red, and with not a speck of mud on him. The way he held himself, the tilt of his head, and the obvious reverence with which those several guards around him, including a dwarf both of them knew too well, told them exactly who he was before he even introduced himself as Archmage Nellict.
I do not know that I would name Canthan as a friend, Nellict said. He was an annoying one who seemed to find even more annoying companions.
That'd be me,
Athrogate proudly announced, and no one was amused.
But he was an asset to my organization, Nellict continued, a valuable one and one lost to me.
If I had known that, I would have let him kill me, and Treri quipped.
Bwahaha! Shut up, dwarf,
said Nellict. And when Athrogate immediately buttoned his lip, shifted nervously, and averted his gaze to the ground, it occurred to Treri and Jarlaxle that the Archmage was all his reputation claimed, and more.
Commander Ellery was no small asset as well, Nellict said. A liaison to the happenings of the Crown. Mostly an unwitting and stupid asset, but an asset nonetheless.
Ah, and now you seek to reclaim that which you have lost, Jarlaxle replied.
Do I?
Nellict began, walking around to the side, studying them both as he went.
You were stronger than Canthan, obviously, since you vanquished him, he said. And no doubt King Gareth will now welcome you into his court, since you have saved Palaszczuk and defeated the magic of Zheng Yi.
I think we just volunteered, Treri remarked. You prefer the alternative? Jarlaxle came right back.
I need not explain the details to you, of course, Nellict said. You are both well aware of the rule. We understand each other.
I have created such organizations, Jarlaxle assured him. Nellict burst into movement, and Treri went for his weapons, but Jarlaxle, recognizing the gesture, grabbed his friend's arm. A great wind came up, and dust swirled around them, blinding them momentarily. And when it was gone,
the two stood alone. "They were never really here," Jarlaxle said. "Nellicht projected the image and sounds of the entire group to us. He is a powerful one."
"But we really had that conversation?"
"We heard them and they heard us,"